Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's up and welcome back to the Kinda Funny Games cast. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes and I'm joined by the new face of video games, Blessing Adeoye Jr.
Tim, I was hoping you wouldn't intro me first because right before the intro hit, I started eating a Ricola because I've been having like a little bit of throat issues. And as soon as the intro hit, I tried to like crunch it real hard, you know, to get it down there to not worry about it. And let me tell you, it was more effort than I thought it was going to be. I am not done crunching on this thing.
Yeah, we'll crunch away, little Bless. Crunch away. Rounding out the rest of our group, we have the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
Bless, soon enough, you'll be back to your throat goating ways, all right?
Mm-hmm. How'd you know that was my nickname?
And rounding out the group today, I'm very, very, very excited to welcome back Jeff Grubb.
How's it going? Here's what I wonder. Andy, do you wear earbuds because your hair is just too pristine? You have to keep it looking good so you don't want the headphones going over your hair?
Partially, but it became the heat.
That's a good point. Okay, fair enough.
Overheads, because of just the nature of San Francisco and our rooms and our insulation.
No air conditioning. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, right. It started getting really bad. I started streaming with like the Astros. And that's how I would primarily stream. But then at night, on certain summer nights, I would feel that shit. And it just got really uncomfortable.
I'm envious because I'm like, I would love to let the hair go. But it's like, yeah, I can't with these headphones. It just looks funky.
Look, hey, Jeff, you tell me. And no, I don't have them down here. Never mind. I was going to grab some extra headphones and like throwing me. It's going to like.
Across the country.
Man. Yeah.
Andy, how do you like using the earbuds? Because that's the thing. I've not done that since working from home, like actually podcasting with earbuds. And it makes me nervous because I do feel so comfortable with like my noise canceling Beats headphones. But for the last year, this is a peek behind the Blessing curtain. I've been I don't know why I say it like
exclusive.
This is a world exclusive. Mono. Huh. I've been considering getting my ears pierced. And I know once I do, for at least like a small period, I'll have to rock the earbuds. But like, I'm nervous about it. I don't know if I'll be able to function the same with earbuds.
So I'll say this, like I've been buying these headphones for the better part of like almost a decade. I've gone through like 6 pairs over 10 years. Whenever I lose them, I'll just buy another one. These are the Sony Extra Bass. Nothing miraculous sound quality wise. I just feel like overall build quality, they're really good. And they're not noise canceling by any means, but they are earbuds and they get stuck in there and they will isolate a whole lot of noise without really kind of intending to do so. Like there's no noise suppression tech in there, but like there are plenty of times where Lulu is barking up a storm and I only hear her through Barrett's mic as opposed to like in the living room. You know what I mean?
Let me tell you something about having kids. You get to a point where you do not want any noise cancellation because as soon as that happens, they are going to like do something to kill themselves and you're not going to know what's happening. So I'm like, I want as much pass through as possible at a certain point.
I got a Michael Haim here that I do worry about a little bit. But...
Yeah, same thing. I mean, same exact thing. You have the same scenario. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
You gotta love it. Of course, this is the Kinda Funny Games cast. Each and every week, we get together to talk about video games and all the things that we love about them. You can get it on youtube.com/kindafunnygames or roosterteeth.com. You can also get it as a podcast by searching your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny Games cast, and we'll be right there for you. If you wanted to get the show ad-free, if you wanted to watch live as we record it, and if you want the exclusive post-show, you gotta go to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, just like our Patreon producers, Anonymous, Fargo Brady, Tyler Ross, Delaney Twinning, First Responder ND, Julian the Gluten-Free Gamer, Alex J. Sandoval, James Hastings, and Casey Andrew have all done. We appreciate all of you so very, very much. If you don't have bucks to toss our way, that's totally cool. When you're out there buying video games on the Epic Games Store, make sure you're using our Epic Creator Code. Kind of funny, whether you're buying Fortnite stuff, Rocket League stuff, Fall Guys stuff, all that stuff. It's going to be cool, and it helps us out for no extra cost to you. A little bit of housekeeping for you. Kind of Funny screencast is popping off right now. Whole bunch of cool reviews. We got Kendrick Lamar's new album. We reviewed that, which makes no sense on a show called Screencast. But you know what? Hey, just appreciate it. We did it, okay? People asked for it, and we did it. Also, later this week, we're going to have the Halo Season 1 review going up, and we have our Top Gun Maverick spoiler-free review that you can go check out. If you want to get some super dope merch, kindoffunny.com/stores where you want to go. And if you want even extra super more exclusive merch, patreon.com/kindoffunny or kindoffunnygames, you can get the Patreon Platinum print shirt for this month, which is the super dope Foxhound Portillo shirt that Andy has made. Before we get into all the other stuff, Jeff, I have a question for you.
Please.
What's it like being Jeff Grubb? Because I feel you were somebody that I've known for many years now, just as kind of like, you were like probably the best example to me of just of a Twitter person. You know, yep. Somebody that I didn't know existed. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I knew existed. And it's like, now we're best friends. You know what I mean? Yeah. I just feel like we have this like circle where it's like, all right, cool. Like, you're just one of those dudes. And I imagine in some ways, I'm one of those dudes to you, just like Andy and Bless as well. But you are different in that you have all the secrets. You have all the knowledge. You have your tendrils everywhere. So you get all the leaks and this and that. Mm-hmm. And you have exploded in popularity where these days I can't go 5 minutes scrolling a Reddit thread without your name popping up. And that must scare you a lot.
You're so big, you got banned from KFW. Like, how does that feel?
That's me on TikTok. I can't go a couple of swipes without seeing industry insider Jeff Grubb and also guy who won Game Awards from 2015, which was like almost a decade ago, Greg Miller.
Right.
Like, it's always one of those sort of things. Yeah.
It's weird. I told myself I would stop saying stuff about my ADHD because people don't want to hear it. But for me, a lot of times stuff is out of sight, out of mind. That's true for almost everything in my life. I got a baby brain when it comes to like retaining like emotions about things or even like experiences. It's pretty useful when I'm like playing video games because I get to go back to the video games I like and play them all over again. But when I like look away from the internet goes away. And so I forget that the internet is still sometimes talking about me. And, you know, part of that is like that feels vain to even like consider that that's happening. But it's a reality. It is. And even if I wanted to consider it, it just does not exist in my brain. So when I get back on the internet, and there's like people have been having like a conversation, like this is happening today, right? And it's because like I decided to have an opinion on Johnny Depp or whatever. But people on Reset Era have been talking about me all day, and I'm just like, okay, this is actually legitimately weird. So it is a little bit scary. Is not the right word because I'm a white man, and I haven't been threatened in any real way. I've definitely privileged on that front, but it's definitely weird and sometimes obnoxious. Which is why I value communities that know how to keep it cool. Like, there are communities out there that know how to keep it cool. I've cultivated one. Our Discord community is great for like game mess and stuff. And I just decided, like, I'll just lean into the branding, right? Game mess was the thing I was just doing as a joke because Game Fest was Jeff Keighley's thing. And I'm going to pretend I'm in a rivalry with him and I'm going to do game mess. But, you know, the branding became a thing. We did our own community and they know how to keep it cool. And that's why I like Kind of Funny community, because everyone seems to understand like the relationship that we have here. And I'm totally okay with it's, I don't view it as that parasocial sort of thing. That's not how I view it when it's people who are like, interacting with me on Twitter or interacting with me on Discord. I honestly do feel like I have a relationship with these people and I try to focus on that stuff. And that makes it a lot easier to like get through the day. Even if other weird stuff is happening in the periphery, I can easily ignore that if there are cool people right in front of me. So I just put the cool people right in front of me, and that works.
Can you talk about how it started and how it's progressed in terms of you becoming one of those guys, right? Yeah. Like, I remember first joining Kind of Funny, and when I started to listen to Kind of Funny Games Daily, Imran Khan was one of the first people I remember of being like, oh, this guy just knows things, right? Like, he's an insider, like, he has his connections, he, like, works in media, but also, like, people trust him enough to divulge secrets with him, right? Like, Jason Schreier's another one of those. I feel like your name came around a couple years ago, and I forget exactly, like, when the first instance of it was, especially on Kind of Funny Games Daily, was bringing up, like, oh, yeah, Jeff Grubb from Games Week mentioned this, right? And that snowballing into what I imagine is your name becoming more popular in terms of somebody who has these connections in the industry and that making people a little bit more comfortable with divulging secrets to you. Is that how things progress? And like, where did that start for you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's right place, right time. Almost all of it is. You know, the learned skill part of it is making people feel comfortable telling you stuff in the first place. And a lot of that comes down to it's video games. So a lot of times I'm very comfortable just saying video games aren't worth this. Video games aren't worth getting people in trouble. Video games aren't worth people losing their jobs. So let's just, we will dance around this. We don't have to divulge this. And people get to a point where they're like, well, you know, I do trust you, but like, what, you know, why should I share this information with you? And then that's the other side of the Lauren skill is, why are we talking about any of these things? And I always try to do it from a point of view of, I'm explaining gamers to game developers, and I'm explaining game developers to, I'm trying to do it both ways. If you're a gamer, I want to explain game dev. And if you're in game dev, I want to explain gamers and how each side is feeling. And so when I really kind of got started with, like, I got a good lead on when the Nintendo Direct Mini was going to happen in March 2020. And no one was like, everyone had an idea something was coming, but I had the exact date and time. And I just didn't know it was a mini. I called it a direct. But Nintendo didn't announce it the day before like they do a lot of times. So it's still the day before. And I know it's going to happen, even though I'm freaking out because they haven't announced it yet. I remember being sick to my stomach. And I decided to just say, listen, I've reported on stories before. No one's really cared. I've reported like stuff on Battlefield before. And that story didn't really do traffic, even though it was all kinds of cool inside information. I'm just going to ride or die on this. And I'm going to say this is definitely happening tomorrow. And people are like, oh, my God, he's doubling down. I can't believe this. And then when we woke up the next day, there was a Nintendo Direct Mini there. And I think people sort of got what was happening at that point, where it's like, I do have information, and I'm also going to make, like, the
dispersion. This man dispersion. Can tell the future.
Yeah. I'm going to try to make it fun, right? I'm going to try to make it fun. Like, it's video games. Again, we're going to go back to, like, this is video games, so we can have some amount of fun with this stuff. And, I've tried to keep that throughout this entire thing. And from there, it was like, okay, I had a string of like really big ones. Eventually, like Mass Effect Legendary Edition was another really big bump in terms of like that audience is crazy and they're super intense on that stuff. So, but most of the time, it's all gone back to explaining one side to the other and then having a good time. And most recently, it was the name of Star Wars Jedi Survivor, where I've had that name for forever, this entire year. And I didn't see much of a reason to put it out there because it's just a name, and that, you know, they said the name of Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order at like E3, and no one really cared. Like, okay, it's a name, but we made it fun by just like I had the audience guess, and until someone got it right, eventually someone got it right, and it's like, okay, well, I said I would say if you got it right, and I'm seeing it in the giant bomb chat. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll confirm it. But yeah, that's been the focus, and it's been like as long as I kind of try to keep it fun, it stays fun for me, and I can kind of keep a good sense of humor about it all. But yeah, it's just a weird thing. It's not something I could have ever intended to happen. Like, this was never a plan of like, I'm going to become a Twitter guy. It was just like, yeah, I'm just going to put the stuff out there and we'll see what comes back. And this is what has come back.
Crazy. And you had your hand raised a long time ago. Do you still, you got something?
I was just going to say, like, I know what it's like when the internet's talking about you and when people are talking about you, Jeff, because like when I interviewed Shaq, he said his son watched my content, which is like, definitely not true, but it's something that I made myself believe. You know what I mean?
Yes, so, it's important. It's important to believe Shaq when he tells you things. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Now, moving on from Jeff Grubb as a topic to another topic that involves Jeff Grubb a lot. You are a Twitter guy in my mind and in my heart for many reasons. One of them being always your industry knowledge, all the insider stuff, just being a cool guy. But the other side of it is you're into all the nerdy shit that like I want to be into, and the Steam Deck and your adventures with the Steam Deck recently have definitely made me believe that I am right in thinking that. Now, Bless and you both have these things. You've been playing a whole bunch of games on them. What are your thoughts about this device as a device, but then also specifically as an emulation device?
I'm still in love with my Steam Deck. Steam Deck is very important for me because I do want games to sort of meet me where I'm at. I've always been into handhelds and portables from the very beginning. And some of my most like intimate and important gaming, experiences happened on handhelds. I mean, my favorite game of all time, the one that like really turned me into a gamer, was The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening on Game Boy. And I've told the story before about like a kid just handed me the cartridge in class, and I have this is not even like a friend of mine. He just gave it to me. Years later, I put together that when the teacher's assistant came to me, was like, oh, you're playing that game too? Where'd you get it from? And I was like, oh, some kid gave it to me. He stole it from that teacher's assistant because she was playing it as well. And years later, I put two and two together. But the point is like, I had this, this relationship with gaming when I held it in my hand right in front of me. And the Steam Deck absolutely builds on that like lineage. And then it also it pairs it with sort of an unlikely partner in PC gaming. And at first, I get the skepticism about that because PC gaming is this oblique, odd-shaped duck, and you're like you're supposed to like sort of struggle with it a little bit because there's like you know the greater reward and all that stuff. And what Valve has done with the Steam Deck is just like solve almost all of those problems out of the gate. And that I was not expecting that. I thought it'd be kind of a long, arduous process between the thing launching and them turning it into a good console. But it launched as a very good console, and it's only gotten better. And a lot of that comes down to the interface and stuff like that. But a lot of it also is just like it is also still a PC underneath. And if you just go one layer deep, if you so choose, you can get in there. And then it's super powerful. And now everyone who has a Steam Deck has this one set unit, and you can sort of set something up and then distribute it to everyone else with a Steam Deck, and everyone can get the benefit of that. And emulation has clearly been the forefront of that right out of the gate with, I mean, for me, I don't, and Blessing, I don't know if you've used this, but EmuDeck,
when oh, you installed yeah. EmuDeck is like a must use. Yeah, like that has really changed the game in terms of the it being a console and not just a PC. Because yes. I'm somebody who, I've messed around with emulation for as long as like, I guess like around 15 years ago, ever since I got access to a PC that I could even use at home, right? Like one of the first things I did was learn that you could get Project 64 relatively easily. Yep. And that's
what was the first game? What was the first game you guys emulated?
On the Steam Deck?
Just in life.
Oh, in life? Oh, shit.
I was typically on like Nesticle or something. Oh, that's a good one.
I know because I downloaded it off of LimeWire and I couldn't figure it out because I didn't understand the whole process of like the ROMs and the emulators. So I'm sitting here just trying to double click on the ROM and it's not opening. And I'm like, what the fuck's going on?
It was definitely like the SNES 9X, whatever the hell that EMU was called. And it was, I want to say it was on some old shitty laptop, and I just thought it was so dope that I could get, like, Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, and all those old Super Nintendo games. And then eventually it turned into getting ROMs and emulators on my old Android phones, and that was, like, the coolest shit of all
time.
And
that was the thing that changed the game for me, where, like, to answer Tim's question, right, I think the first game I emulated must have been Super Mario 64, because it definitely was Project 64, and that definitely was a thing that opened up the doors to me in terms of, fuck, I can do this. And then once Android phones became a thing, the phone I had in high school, and, like, it was either sophomore or junior year, was the Samsung Moment, which was a, it had, like, a keyboard that slid out. It was the Android, and I remember getting the Super Nintendo and GBA emulators for that. And I played so many games in the back of English class. Like, I think I beat Pokemon Emerald in the back of English class. I played most of Earthbound. Like, the list goes on in terms of games that I really got into during high school that I just played on my phone, and that was such a mind-blowing thing for me. And that's actually the thing that playing emulated games on the Steam Deck has been such a throwback to for me is, like, oh, shit. Not only was it cool as hell back in the day to be able to play Super Nintendo games on my phone, mobile, wherever I go, on the bus, wherever, but now I am, like, last night I was in bed playing Burnout 3, and it was, like, a religious experience, me being, like, what am I doing right now? Like, if I told myself 10 years ago that I would be doing this, right? Like, playing this thing on a handheld device with, like, with all the controls I need, right? With, like, extra buttons, the bumpers, all that stuff. I'll be, my mind would be blown.
So that actually is a great segue for me, because I feel like I dabbled with a lot of emulation on my PC, but it was really the PSP when I went full on, I'm a goddamn pirate on the seven seas. And I was playing, like, everything, right? And, like, that thing you could bust open, and there was so many different firmware updates and shit that allowed you to do stuff. But there was always the workarounds that you had to do. Like, even for things like a Super Nintendo, you'd have to activate frame skip. You would have to really kind of dial in, and like, it was a pain in the ass to get right. And some certain games wouldn't even run, whatever. I'm seeing the Steam Deck now, and, like, Bless, you sent me a video of you booting up Marvel versus Capcom 2, and I'm sitting here like, god damn, how is this possible?
It's gonna take you for a ride, man.
Like, god, take me for a damn ride. But I'm like, are the problems that I'm talking about still a thing with the Steam Deck, or are we at a point that, like, you know what, it works 98% of the time, there is a 2% little thing you have to do?
The EMU Deck is the thing I made it super easy, right? Like, this is the thing where it's like it configures it all for the Steam Deck itself. Like, that's the thing about the Steam Deck being a single piece of hardware that everyone has access to. It you could just standardize everything, and that's what EMU Deck is. It is this open source tool that these guys made together, and they basically just said, okay, you click this button inside the Linux operating system on the Steam Deck, and it's just going to open up a command window, and it's going to download every single emulator you need. And it's not just going to download them, it's going to configure them so it works with the button controls of the Steam Deck. It's going to configure them, wow, so the screen looks right, and it's going to configure them so that they run like on the right graphics library. So it's going to use Vulkan instead of OpenGL, so it runs really fast. It's just all set up for you. It's the kind of thing, it's like, I got someone like text me like, hey, how do I do this? I'm like, just go to EmuDeck and follow the instructions. It's so simple.
It was a 13-minute YouTube video that I watched that explained those exact instructions, and it took about that long to get it set up.
Yeah, and there are still some twerks, like this is someone else configuring it for you. So like GameCube, I was like, oh, they have GameCube buttons set to like the letter being the letter. So the A button is the A button, but then the B button is the B button. And it's actually not, the GameCube is a little bit different. Like the X was over here and the Y was over here. So I just go and then change that myself, but then it just saves that. And if I want to update EmuDeck, I could just save my GameCube stuff separately and just say, don't mess with that, but update everything else. It is still emulation. It's still people figuring this stuff out, but it's so much smoother than what it used to be, especially if you're considering the fact that you are like basically setting up every single system from the beginning of time, anything that's on like on RetroArch, and then anything up to PlayStation 3 and Xbox, which all still work.
Question for Jeff and Bless. I'm a magic genie, all right? I pop into your room, you call the cops, and I'm like, don't call the cops, I'm a magic genie, and I have to convince you. And then I say, I wave my magic wand, and I say, you can go back to the inception of the Steam Deck, and you could change one thing about it. What would it be? And also, what do you want to see from the Steam Deck too? What would you like for them to improve on? They may be the same answer.
I mean, battery life would probably be my answer for both. Like, this thing is doing so much, which means that it dies pretty quickly, and it ranges from game to game. Most of the games I've been playing on this thing have been either indie stuff or emulated stuff. I've not played the like Sekiro's or the God of War's and all that stuff, and that's funny enough, that was my plan originally. But talking about like how well it consolizes PC, my story with the Steam Deck right now is, you know, getting it, feeling so comfortable with it and so easy access with it in a way that I've never felt with PC, because PC, not that PC isn't easy to use or Steam's easy to use or any of those things, but I still view PC, my PC, as like a work thing or a place I come to browse or a place I come to use TurboTax. Shout out to Greg Miller, right? Like, I don't necessarily want to sit down at my desk to play video games. I know there are ways to like do that on my TV and figure out that setup. That's always just been too much of an extra step to me. Yeah, like I have my PS5. Why would I do that on my PC? I have an Xbox Series X, right? Like, why would I go the extra mile to figure out how to make all that shit work? The Steam Deck makes it feel as accessible as a console, right? But then also have that extra layer of depth where I can do the emulation, go to Linux, do all that stuff, right? And being able to have that and then find games like Patrick's Parabox, which I've been playing, and like I beat Patrick's Parabox last week during my trip to Houston. Like, that's a game that's only available on PC, and it's one of the best puzzle games I played in the last year, and it's incredible, right? And it's only on PC. Same with there's this game Olekhead that was announced at Nintendo's Indie World thing. During the Nintendo Indie World, there was somebody in chat that was like, oh, this game is out on PC right now. And I was like, fuck, maybe I'll just download this and play it on PC, right? And I bought it and played through it. And it's like a 2 to 3 hour game. But I'm like, damn, this has been on PC for a while, and I've not heard anybody talk about Olekhead. And it's a really cool game with a really dope art style, really great soundtrack, puzzle platforming, really clever platforming. And like, I can't believe this is way off my radar, right? Like, the Steam Deck is doing so much in terms of opening my eyes to other games that are out there. And I think right now, like, more power obviously is like a thing that I could ask for in terms of like being able to run more games and shit. But like right now, I think the thing that I am most conscious about is the battery life. I think I wish I could get more juice out of it, even though I understand why it's like it's running out as quick as it is. Like, look at this thing.
the battery for me, it's like, I do wish the battery life was better, but I wish the battery life was better on my Switch in the same sort of way. It's very comparable. It is well within that range of what modern handhelds have been since the PSP and not quite the DS was pretty good, but like I want the 3DS and then the you know, everything since, we get like 2.5 to maybe 6 hours on the top end. Most games you're not going to get 6-7 hours on the Steam Deck, but you will get 5 on the smaller stuff. And especially like when you're emulating old stuff, you can like, that's what, this is one nice thing. It's like, if you're willing to go one level deeper, They have a menu that pops out to the side. You could see your battery stats, and you could have that stuff like just overlaid so you could see how much juice you're using, how much wattage you're actually using. And I remember with the PS3 emulator, at least on day one, I haven't checked in a while, I was playing 50 Cent Blood on the Sand. And
fuck yeah, you were.
It was using like 24 watts of power, which is a huge amount. That's like basically maxing the thing out. It was like more of wattage than I was getting when I was playing Elden Ring, which I played the entirety of Elden Ring on my Steam Deck and had no problem with it. But when you're playing anything else, like even like Dolphin was using like 8 watts, and that is very, very good. So I get like 5 hours when I'm playing anything on GameCube. And it's like, okay, this is kind of an incredible GameCube machine. Like, I was not anticipating that, and yet here it is. So when it comes to like what I would change, I think you know, it is light for what it is. I think I would like it to be a little bit lighter. I have one of the early production models, so I have the good fan in it. Even still, I would like it to be a little bit quieter. But they don't have to do much. I guess the next one, if it's just like a little bit more streamlined and more powerful and has a slightly better battery life, that's kind of all I really need. This thing is almost, favorite gaming PC of all time, and it's almost perfect.
Yeah, like it's, I, this could end up being one of my main platforms, if not maybe my main platform to game on. Like, that's how much I'm enjoying my time with the Steam Deck. And like, even to go back to Tim's questions about like emulation and like quirks and all that stuff, right? Like, I am shocked by how well emulation is working on this thing. It's not necessarily perfect. Like, there are just weird things here and there that I might just be part of the game, right? In terms of like, with Burnout 3, with default controls, like obviously PS2 era, X is to go, it's like square to, I guess technically like A to go on my Steam Deck, right? X to break, all that stuff, yada yada, right? I wanted to remap and make it R2 to go, L2 to break, you know, the modern way to play a driving game. In Burnout 3, L2 naturally is to change the song that's playing on the radio station. I remapped it, figured it'd work, and like it was working at first, and then I realized that like, oh shit, every time I break, I'm changing the radio station, and there's no like there's no way for me to unmap change radio station for some reason. Like, I can't remap the trigger controls for some reason in the emulated games. Like, that's one quirk that's kind of weird. That's like not a big problem until it becomes a problem. And then like, right. Just things here and there in terms of like, EmuDeck isn't perfect and Steam ROM Manager isn't perfect. Like, I do want to give a big shout out to how it pulls artwork, because when you place games into your folder and into your libraries, you then run a script. It then pulls artwork from a database, and the artwork, I think it ranges from like official to like fan made artwork, and all the artwork is fucking immaculate. It is really good looking artwork for like classic games. Like, I'm looking at N64 Zelda artwork that is like just the sword, and it looks fucking cool as hell.
This is stuff that people have been doing for a long time. Because like, I remember years ago when I got my Steam Link, actually, I set up all my ROMs in Steam, and then I'd be able to just pick them from the Steam menu on my Steam Link, and it would just stream them over to me, and it would have all the art, and it would say what game I was playing in Steam. So people would be like, "How are you playing like Chrono Trigger on Steam or whatever?" This before it was on there, and I'm like, "Oh yeah, no, I just have the ROMs there." But there's like. Like, there's quirks, but there's also like miracles, right? Like, when you think about the fact that this is a Linux PC, and there are some emulators that don't run on Linux, like the Wii U emulator. So that's you're going to be running a Windows version of that through a translation layer. And this is already something that is emulating a different computer. And it's like, we are jumping through so many hoops. And it works. It works really well.
It's crazy. Like, it works better than like even like certain games, like Mario 64. I'd play through Project 64, and there'd be hella textures missing. Like, you'd walk into the castle, and the rug in the middle is like missing and stuff like that. Like,
sure,
there's stuff that I've seen consistently in Project 64 and other emulators that'd be broken in that way. And Steam Deck, surprisingly, like so much of it just works. Like, there are things like Mario Kart 64 was one of the ones that I tried out where I was like, oh, I don't know what's going on here. Where like, you come in and like all of the textures are missing in the menus. Like, the menus just have everything missing, and then you get into the race and it's fine. But like, you know, there's weird stuff like that, and there's just weird stuff in terms of in EmuDeck and Steam ROM Manager, like some artwork that's missing or that pulls the wrong thing. Like, I got
you can also set your own if you want at any time. Yes. That's the thing. Like,
which is like such a great solution, because I do want to go back in there and do it. But like, Sonic 3 and Knuckles I got for Sega Genesis, and for some reason the art keeps pulling Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing, and I can't figure out how to get it to read the right thing. And maybe that's just because it doesn't have Sonic 3 and Knuckles in that way. But like, it's all just weird one-off quirks compared to like the, again, Jeff Grubb says a miracle, and I 100% agree. Like, the miracle that so much of it works the way it does. And also, quick disclaimer that, like, you know, I mentioned playing Burnout 3 and these other games. I own these games, and so, you know, if you're gonna come at me for breaking the law, I own these games.
The Library of Alexandria gave us the example that these things should belong to everybody, belong to the people. This is just a real quick spiel about this. video games are experiences, And you shouldn't be able to deny people experiences at a certain point. I understand if it's product on the market, but the day it stops being a product, it becomes a memory. It becomes an experience. It becomes an educational tool. And if you're someone who has even a passing interest in video games, treat the internet as the Library of Alexandria, and you are just checking a book out. You're checking a game out, and you're going to play it. And that experience belongs to you. Just go emulate games. Emulate games, please.
I had a real quick question. Just like patents wise, obviously we see a lot of kind of like unofficial mini PCs being built, and it's always like, it's always something that I see Bob from the Wolf Den on his YouTube channel buying all these weird little handhelds, and so does Anthony Carboni. But what would stop a larger, more official company in the likes of, like, I don't know, Samsung or an LG. I'm just trying to think of, like, whoever makes Android phones. What would stop them from trying to make a comparable product?
Yeah, I have an answer to this. They are subsidizing such a huge part of the cost of this thing. So there are comparable handheld gaming PCs before this even came out, and they are less powerful. They use older components, and they are twice the cost. They are like $1,100 to $1,300. That Aya Neo, something I was going to get, like, the Win GPD 3 is the most recent one from GPD,
right,
who's been doing these things for a long time. I was looking $1,000. I'm like, I'll save us some money and I'll get one, because I really need to be able to play games this way, even if it's going to run it at like 720, 25 frames per second, 30 frames per second. I still kind of think I want that. Valve is like, we are going to make the money up by selling you more games on Steam. And I mean, hey, Bless, have you bought any games on Steam at a higher rate than what you used to?
Right now, yeah, I'm buying, like, yeah. I mean, I usually don't even buy games on Steam, and now I do. Like, that is the difference for me.
That's the difference. And we're gonna see other companies also try this stuff. But guess what they're gonna do when they put their stuff out? They're probably gonna use SteamOS instead of Windows. And then who gets the money? It's still going to go to Valve, because they're going to use the Valve. They're going to use the Steam store, because they've solved all these issues for them. And it's like, why wouldn't you just, instead of putting Windows on there, have to put your own stuff on top of that? You get all those Windows games now. Just use Steam OS. This is their plan all along.
Wow. All right. Moving on from the Steam thing, I want to talk about games in 2023. But before I do that, let me tell you about our sponsors. Shout out to MapleStory for sponsoring this episode. Are you tired of being judged based on the way you look? MapleStory is too. Because while it may look cute and cuddly, this is a deeply hardcore MMORPG. MapleStory is full of vast, colorful lands and a ferocious array of towering monsters. And don't get us started about damage. MapleStory will have you dealing billions with each swing of your Fafnir battle cleaver as you battle boss after epic boss, and you can customize your Mapler your way. MapleStory has 40 plus jobs and thousands of weapons, outfits, hats, armor sets, and mounts for you to take on your journey, from the Lionheart battle bracers to vicious lollipop wands. And you know I love a lollipop wand. There's a ton to see and do in this picturesque world, and with 18 years of content to sink your Genesis weapon into, there will always be a new adventure around the corner. MapleStory is ready to go. Are you? You can go to MapleStory.com to check out the game and play for free. That's free, guys. Come on. MapleStory.com. This episode is brought to you by Lumen. If your skincare routine is basically you washing your face in the shower with that one shower gel that you've been using since high school, then it's time to level up the skincare game. Thanks to Lumen, you can drop that bottle of 3-in-1 and start using products that actually take care of your face. With Lumen, you get the highest quality products. All their products aim to help with those stubborn acne scars, under eye dark circles, wrinkles, sun damage, dry skin, oily skin. Gia has been using the charcoal face wash and charcoal face scrub, and she feels so fresh, so clean afterward. She has dry skin, so especially during the winter, it's nice to have that hydration and exfoliation. Also, she's a big fan of the really subtle citrus smell. All you have to do is take a 2-minute quiz on their website, and they'll tell you exactly which routine is best for you based on your skincare needs. Level up your skincare game with Lumen Skin today. You can go to lumenskin.com/kindoffunny to get your free trial of Lumen's products. That's lumenskin.com/kindoffunny to get your free trial of Lumen's products. lumenskin.com/kindoffunny. All right, here we are. It's 2022. Right now, it's May 17th. At any moment, every game we know about can get delayed again. and who the hell knows what's going to happen. But the reason I want to do this topic this week, and I wanted to get Jeff for this because he has all the inside information. He has an understanding of all this stuff.
He's a fortune teller.
Mm-hmm. In the last week, a bunch of games got delayed. We officially got word that Redfall and Starfield are not going to hit 2022. They are going to hit 2023. And that is adding to a long list of games that we already know had either been planned for 2023 or things like Breath of the Wild 2 that also got delayed earlier in the year. Just now we know 2023 is what we're looking at. I want to start this conversation looking at the rest of 2022 and thinking about what games do we think are remaining to be delayed or pushed. Mm-hmm. And then looking at 2023 and asking ourselves, is it going to be the best year for video games ever? Or is it going to be a similar situation we've had in recent times where everything's just going to get delayed again? And it'll be spread out where the games that are getting delayed from this year to next year, sure, they'll come out next year. But the games that are already planned for next year are just going to get delayed even further out. So starting with 2022, Jeff, what do you think? Are there going to be any major shakeups left?
I mean, we still like the other shoe needs to drop, right? We need to hear about what's happening with God of War and all that stuff, right? Like, we still don't know anything that doesn't have a solid release date. And even those that do, like we saw with Starfield, it feels like they are so ripe for the picking to get just pushed in the next year. And like, what is happening here is what's happening with everything is just, there's not enough talent. There's not enough people to work on these games. And, you could try to go hire a contract studio to like work on a very specific thing you need done. Well, they're all busy working on games too. Everyone is maxed out. And I think we saw that Microsoft was going to double its budget for giving people raises across the board. And that definitely applies to games as well. Like, they are looking like, hey, what do we have to do to keep you? That's where they're at. They're just trying to keep their talent around. And so expanding and trying to like build out these teams is not even really an option. So every game seems like it is possibly going to step into next year. I want to believe that God of War is coming out this year. I think they really, really want to get it out. But then beyond that, what are the other big games this year? Like, I mean, Need for Speed is probably going to come out in November. Are they going to delay that? Maybe, but it's Need for Speed. It'll come out when it comes out.
Yeah. Going around the table, as of this moment, does your gut say God of War comes out this year? I say yes.
I say yes.
I'm 70-30 on it. I think like there's a 70% chance that it doesn't, that it slips into spring next year, but then a 30% chance that it does.
God, I hope it doesn't get delayed, only because spring is already looking like this past year's spring. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put my belief in the power of Jesus Christ, and I'm going to hope that it comes out this year.
Until Kratos beats the crap out of him, right?
And so then, Jeff, I guess the other big release that potentially I think a lot of us thought was going to be this year, but from things you're saying, maybe not, Jedi
Survivor.
Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That was stupid, I've been saying that for a while that they wanted it to come out this year. And even when I was saying that every time, I was like, I keep hearing, they keep telling me it's not going to come out this year. That's coming out in the first quarter of next year. At least that's the plan right now. They haven't even named it when they said that. That was part of their earnings report where they're like, major IP first quarter. And then later they confirmed that the remake was Dead Space and that's coming in January. So February or March for Jedi, that seems right, but it also seems like, okay, we're starting to really pack up those dates already. But yeah, that game didn't really have much of a chance of ever coming out this year, just like everything else.
So are there any other big games that we're missing here? Like looking at the rest of this year, the 2022, the mega, mega big hitters.
I mean, I don't know if we count these as mega, mega big hitters, but there's the triple threat of Forspoken, Gotham Knights, and Saints Row. Like, I know we don't put those at like the God of War level, but I think like all of those are candidates. Saints Row, I would be surprised because they do have that specific date in August, and that one already got delayed. Yeah, like got delayed out of February into August. And they've been working on that one for a while, but like Forspoken also got delayed, but that's one that like, I forget if they put a hard date on it. I think they did put a hard date on all these, actually. But I could see it happening for those, right? Like, I don't think there's any reason why those can't, right? Like, why those wouldn't those wouldn't have a reason to not come together by then.
October 11th. I
agree with you on that. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
October 11th is Forspoken currently.
Okay. Then the other one is Final Fantasy 16, right? Does that come out this year? And I think I'm going to say that one probably actually they want to get out of this year and probably also ends up slipping to next year is what I think.
Man, I'm coming back to Tim's question of like, will next year be the best year ever? And like at first I was like, oh, we said it every single year. Like, oh man, will next year have that many bangers? And now like going through the list, I'm like, shit, okay, maybe there's a chance, right? I forgot about Final Fantasy 16.
Yeah, so I mean, we're saying this of, let's just go with the assumption that God of War somehow does come out this year. So sure, 2023 won't have God of War, but what it could have potentially is Breath of the Wild 2, Starfield, right? Redfall. Mm-hmm. Final Fantasy 16, like continuing
Spider-Man 2, I think has a slate for 2023.
Let's start there. Spider-Man 3, do we think it comes out? Sorry, Spider-Man 2, does it come out in 2023?
I don't think so, but I mean, it's Insomniac, so why would I doubt them? I don't know.
Should they may drop it in 2 months, Jeff?
That and Wolverine.
Sure, that comes out next year. Why not? That would be wild if that came out alongside all those other games. What a year! I hope it comes out. I'm pulling for him because I love Spider-Man. Those games are so good.
I'm gonna lean towards no, but that would really break my heart because I would just push Wolverine out even further. Like I don't know exactly how the teams are split on this and whether it's like what most studios do, where they have a small kind of production crew working on the next thing and a larger crew kind of finishing up the more released or the more finished product, which would be Spider-Man at this point. But that would absolutely break my heart because I think that that's kind of means like 2025 for Wolverine or something like that.
My question is, when was the last time you got a year without a big first-party Sony exclusive? Because if our prediction is that God of War Ragnarok does come out this fall and Spider-Man 2 ends up getting delayed next year, right? Like, then what do we get from Sony? Because it's going to be something. Like, we have to get something. And there's, like, Last of Us Factions. There's the whole rumor regarding Last of Us Remake and all that stuff. And it seems
I keep hearing that's coming out this year.
This year. Yeah,
the Last of Us Remake this holiday, yes.
No shit.
Yes,
it's really fast.
That surprises me because
you got to keep in mind, like Last of Us Part Two, came out a while ago, and there's people at that studio that were looking around for something to do, and then that visual arts group was looking at maybe kind of taking over Uncharted and becoming their own studio, and that never really became anything. So they're like, well, we'll do Last of Us Remake, and then the people that weren't doing anything at Naughty Dog were like, hey, we could take this over. And I don't know, that's a pretty efficient, like, well-oiled machine over there at Naughty Dog. And they wouldn't have to do too much because that's the whole point, is that this is a game that they can update really quickly. So, I mean, think about how frequently those Resident Evil games are coming out. I think it's a similar, very similar thing where that's like, we have the bones here, we can build on that. And so, yeah, this holiday is what we keep hearing.
And these are even less
I'm pretty confident bones. About that, too.
These are even less bones to have to update. But I wonder, like, what are they doing engine-wise? Like, I don't understand how, because it's obvious that there's a big graphical leap between The Last of Us 1 and 2, like just lighting and everything else wise. And I don't know exactly what they're doing to help mitigate all the issues that would happen on the tech side. Like that just seems like kind of a nightmare with everything that they've have going on in Part 2.
I think that they welcome the challenge more than the, but I mean, it's not, I don't think it was going to be too much because it's like, they know what the scene needs to be already. And so they're just filling in the technical gaps. And that's the stuff that they're best at. The people that were working on this at Naughty Dog, this is not the people that were like, concepting the next game. These are the people that have already solved these problems before. I think it probably is one of their big holiday games this year.
I'm just surprised at that with the HBO show. Because like looking at The Witcher and knowing that the Netflix show kind of boosted sales of Witcher 3 so dramatically.
The Witcher came out. When did The Witcher 3 come out though? Years and years before that. So as long as that thing is relatively fresh and there on the shelves, it should see a boost when it comes out. And then when the show comes out, another boost. That is their expectations. That is what I think will happen.
That's a good point.
And I think that was the method. I believe in the report that came out from Bloomberg, about like a little bit over a year ago. I think that was part of the methodology of it, was that like, yeah, we want to green light this remake so that we can have this juice going into the Last of Us HBO show and it all work together. And there's been back and forth regarding, okay, are we going to release this alongside factions? Like, does this fit in? And I forget if this was reports or this is like us speculating, but like, does it come out alongside a director's cut for Last of Us Part 2? Like, I could see it being bundled in pretty much any way and working, or getting divvied up in terms of like, okay, cool, remake drops this fall, and then Part 2 plus factions, Part 2 director's cut plus factions drops next year. Like, I think there's so much that they can do with that. And I think, like, I think it paints a good picture of like, oh shit, we're going into another year where like next year might be the year of the Last of Us, right? If we get it this fall and then get more next year plus the HBO show, like that might be a lot of what Sony has to offer. But I also think it frees up this fall as well too, in case like God of War isn't able to hit. I think if you have a Last of Us project hit this fall and then also have PSVR 2 hit this fall, then like the fall might be covered, and it might even be more advisable to hold God of War up until February, and let God of War plus whatever other Last of Us project might hit hold down the fort for 2023, which could be crazy for 2023.
It's perfect to like for this show to kind of help, you know, bring more sales to the franchise, and once that comes out, the game will obviously sell gangbusters when it releases Last of Us Remake, and then the show will help, you know, obviously add a big boost into that. And what else should they do that for? And where else are they going to capitalize on that? Twisted Metal,
Twisted
baby.
Metal. Let's go. Fuck? Anthony Mackie.
Who the fuck wants this? God damn it. It's so stupid.
I love
so Twisted stupid.
Metal.
Anthony making it
I'm looking, forward to the show. I think the show's going to be hilarious.
I think it's going to be a fun watch.
Let's
watch
with the boys.
Anthony
Mackie,
he's a funny dude. Like,
yeah.
You know him driving a clown car.
It's him, Andy. It's him, Andy Mackie, man.
Anthony.
Tim.
Sold. You know what? You sold me.
Yep. Well done.
I mean, Anthony.
So, staying with the zombie remake situation of big AAA games, Resident Evil 4. Right. All signs are pointing to this thing existing. When is it announced, and when is it actually released? And I think Capcom is in a interesting place right now where they, I guess, have the summer. So at any point, they could just drop a showcase during Game Fest somewhere.
Right.
Or even just during the Summer Game Fest showcase itself. That would be a great place to announce Resident Evil 4. But do we think that that's this year or next year? Because my gut says next.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on the gut feeling of it. Feels like if they announced Resident Evil 4 at Summer Game Fest and then released it this holiday, I would be like, whoa, that's happening already. But it's not out of the realm of possibility. It feels like the right kind of game for Summer Game Fest. This is all just like me like speaking up to the dome. I don't know if that's the case, but it's like that seems like it would be a good fit, and that some relationship that Jeff Keighley would have and be able to make happen. And yeah, I think it's the kind of game that could they're again, these remakes come out at such a clip that they probably could have it ready. But I'm not ready to commit to that. I think that there's a good chance it's one of those things that just doesn't even get talked about until next year.
Then do you think that we get it next year?
I think that's at the latest, I think, actually. The latest it would be next year. That doesn't feel like one of those ones that's going to keep slipping and slipping forever.
So, man, that's nuts, guys. Like, so then we start the year. Guaranteed, well, and there's no guarantees, but Dead Space remake, right? It has that January date. Then let's start there. I'm actually a little surprised about, like, they announced that in this last week. One of the pieces of good news in terms of game, not delays, but just like release date announcements, that is sooner than I expected it to be. Do you think
Can you believe they were originally going to do it in October? They were originally planning to have that for this October, which of course was never really going to happen, but that was the target.
Do you believe January 27th, 2023 can happen for Dead Space Remake?
I do, just based on what I've heard about it. It's like everyone's really happy with it. Everyone's really impressed with the way it looks. That doesn't necessarily mean there isn't just something that isn't getting to me in there, or there aren't other concerns that won't crop up between now and then. But it definitely feels like one of those games that could make that release date. I think they want that game out before the end of the fiscal in March. Like, if it gets delayed, it gets delayed to like March. It's kind of what I would think, because EA doesn't have a lot for this holiday season. They do plan to have two big games before the end of the fiscal, but which one of those is more likely to get delayed? It's going to be Star Wars Jedi Survivor. So,
goddamn,
I think that Dead Space probably does make it.
They do have something big right now, Jeff. Apex Legends Mobile, baby. I'm interested to see what that does money-wise, though. Like, yeah, legitimately, that, I feel like that's a really interesting spot for EA to be in mobile-wise for a franchise that's been successful for quite some time.
Yeah,
Wrong, though. That's what they're focused on instead of, like, Battlefield. They're like, hey, it's all about Apex, baby. That's what makes the money.
right now I'm in a place where I'm like, yo, fuck Starfield versus Breath of the Wild versus God of War Ragnarok. Like, I want the Dead Space remake versus Resident Evil 4 remake battle.
Versus
like,
Last of Us remake.
versus Last of Us remake, right? Like, those are all games that, like, have that, like, core DNA in them that, like, you know, harkens back to, like, the survival horror shit. And
too
like
scary. I'll sit this one out.
That's gonna be such a great back and forth to see how these games, like, either success or fail, what they're going for. But also, like, when we get to the discussion of the end of the year of, like, best horror remake, like, which one stands supreme. I'm so excited for that.
Yeah. I mean, okay, like, go for it, Jeff.
I was gonna say, do you want me? I have a list of games that, as of last year, Microsoft was targeting for 2023. Do you want to hear it? Because I can just
let's go. Okay. Yeah.
So these are the games as of around the time of E3 last year. This is what they expected to have ready by 2023. So a lot of this is going to change, and I guarantee some of them aren't. But here we go: Avowed, Fable, Perfect Dark,
no way,
Everwild, which has definitely been just blasted off the face of the planet. Hellblade 2. Contraband, which is the one they introduced with Steely Dan last year. In Exile's next game, Compulsion's next game, and the Coalition's next non-Gears project.
They wanted Avowed and Fable in the same year.
They were targeting both for 2023.
To be fair, they're making it rain RPGs. Like, they have more RPGs than they can handle. At this point, they got to put out multiple big RPGs a year to keep up.
Multiple high fantasy RPGs in the same year?
Almost. I mean, they also hold Elder Scrolls. One, if not both, are going to get delayed, though. Like, that's the reality. So why 100%. Not target them both for 2023?
You know what? Fuck it. Release them on the same day as a little double pack. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Dude, honestly, at this point.
$60 for one, $70 for both. We don't know how to do business. My children are starving. Please help me.
So, okay, so now that we have that list of games, that obviously some of it is comical, that yes, it'll be way later if it even happens at all. Yep. But now we are adding Redfall and Starfield to the mix.
Yes.
Where those games, I believe, are 2023, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So with that, I imagine both are first half of 2023. I imagine they're going to want Starfield out, what, February, March?
February, March sounds right to me, but who knows?
Where does that leave Redfall, too? Because, again, that was expected summer of this year, and that was the concern I had for it when they announced the delay of both of those games. You know, Starfield didn't surprise me, because if it got delayed even once past its 11/11, like, it was going to get pushed out of this year. Whereas Redfall now is getting, with its vague summer release window, right, it's like a good 6-7 month push. So it's like, did they really need that much time to fix up with whatever Redfall needs fixing up and push it past Starfield's now predicted date? Or, like,
Barrett, that had to have been a typo. Like, I feel like them saying that Redfall is due out in the summer, like, you know, they could, that had to have just been an oversight, like some intern typed in the wrong day, because that seems like the most unrealistic thing ever.
Blessing, you know, that's the team that did Prey, right? And, like, what big project have they been doing since Prey? Like, they've supported Prey since then, but they haven't, like, worked on a major game since then. And that was,
I think this being multiplayer probably throws them for no pun intended, a loop a little bit, a loop of death. But I do think that it is a different kind of undertaking for them, where I honestly could see it being delayed past Starfield, where, like, Starfield gets delayed into, what, let's say, like, March, April, May, that area, and Redfall maybe goes into an early beta, because I don't think Microsoft has recently had experience with Bleeding Edge, which came out and immediately just fucking died. And I think with something like Redfall, which does have Arkane Austin working on it, right, like a talented studio, a big studio, making this game that I think does have the potential in terms of genre, right? Because, like, it's a co-op shooter, it's like an open co-op shooter, it could be like a Borderlands, right, mixed with the Arkane sense of design. I think there's a lot of promise there that could be cool, even though we've not seen much. I could see the case for, hey, let's take our time with this one. Let's treat it well. Let's, like, we've seen the way we've had the Halo test flights work, right? Like, what if we had Redfall test flights, where it is, all right, cool, in January, you guys are getting your hands on it for the first time for, like, a couple of weeks. Let's take feedback. Let's pull back. All right, cool. Let's come back in March. Get more feedback, pull it back, and then release in summer 2023. I think it's one to take your time with.
I even wonder how much they're hearing. That's such a great point, Bless, because I wonder how much they are hearing about that from people not at Arkane or not at Bethesda, like, just straight up people from Xbox being like, hey, Halo Infinite was kind of messy, and all of that process was not ideal. please do what you all need to do. Don't rush out anything, because like I just feel like they can't make that mistake again with another large multiplayer title.
Well, 2023 was always the proving ground for Xbox, right? It was always going to be like, this is why when people are like calling for heads right now this year, like, we got to fire this management. It's too early because they never really were intending to prove this model of how Xbox was going to work in 2021 or 2022. It was always going to be about, in 2023, can we hit that one major game per quarter? And will every one of those at least be in the talks for being in people's top 10s? Not everyone's top 10s, but enough people's top 10s that they feel like they were worthy of putting this much effort into. And they were never going to do that this year, but they were going to do it next year. And it's like, at this point, like, you know, maybe Redfall and Starfield helps them fill out that calendar so they are able to do that. But that's, they need to get that right. They need to get 2023 right, even more than they needed to figure out like something for the later half of this year. They have nothing for the rest of this year, which they probably will have maybe one or two small games, but if they have nothing for the rest of this year, that's one thing. If 2023 is a wash, that's the ball game. It feels like they have to prove it then.
And you know, like, not to beat a dead horse and get too into this, people that have listened to the show know the argument that I'm about to make to an extent, so I'm going to jump off from there. But it's like, we've been waiting for Xbox to have this forever.
Yes.
You know, since the Xbox One was announced, it's like, well, they're getting these acquisitions. They have all this IP that they're working on. We're past the stage of everything has to be either Gears or Halo, and we're getting some new IP. We're getting some new blood in here. And with Game Pass being the success that it is, and this proven kind of distribution platform more than anything at this point, like, they are just kind of getting all their pieces in place to eventually dominate, and then that domination just won't stop. And that'll be similar to like what we saw where PlayStation did the exact same thing during the PS4 generation, and towards the like the beginning of the PS4 life versus the end of it is just, it's completely different things. But now,
before Bloodborne and after Bloodborne, like, yes, those are two different 100%. Periods of time.
Yeah. And it's like, now PlayStation's just continuing on that momentum, and they and even with the pandemic that obviously changed the exact strategy of things, the core remained the same, where we're going to consistently get PlayStation Studio titles, you got to imagine, till the end of time at this point, because they have that system in place. We're going to eventually get that with Xbox. And when you look at like the streaming war side of things, of like TV and movies and stuff, like Disney Plus, right, and HBO Max and Apple TV, like some of the heavier hitter streaming giants out there, they are still trying to figure out like what their cadence of releases look like. And on the Disney side, it's like we're about to, for the first time next month, get overlapping Marvel and Star Wars content in the same week. And I'm surprised it's even taken this long. And it's only taken this long because of the pandemic, because things have moved around. The other side of that story is, though, with all their Star Wars projects, and specifically with their Marvel projects, there is an order they have in their mind of marketing and strategy and release, where for the first time ever in Marvel history, they're sitting on essentially finished projects, whether it's TV shows or movies, that they're like, we're just going to sit on this and we're moving some things around because it makes more sense marketing wise. I think we're going to hit that point with a lot of Xbox games.
Oh, 100%.
Where I wouldn't be surprised if Redfall is actually done sooner than Starfield or whatever, but they still hold it for a May or August slot because it just makes more sense for them for the grand Xbox rollout that I truly believe we are going to get one day. And I think once we get it, it's not going to let up and it's not going to stop. And I think that them putting out Halo Infinite last year was them not being confident in it and be like, we got to put something out. We need to put something out.
I mean, look at Nintendo as like an alternative. Like, it feels like it's a different world, but I mean, it is, because they just treat it so differently. And Nintendo does this all the time now. In the last few years, they've held on to stuff since like Pikmin 3 Deluxe, which is one they held on to for months and months. And I knew about it and like was waiting for them to announce it. And I would say it was going to happen and then it wouldn't happen. And people like, where is it? And then finally it comes out. It's like, okay, they're doing this new strategy where they just hold on to stuff for quite some time and wait until it makes sense. And I think a lot of that comes down to Nintendo only has so much of marketing resources that they're like, just line things up and we will get our marketing resources around to it when we can. So it's a little bit different, but it also has really benefited them for when they have had to move a game back, they can now move something else forward, which is kind of unheard of. So they move up, Xenoblade moved up. Like, who else could possibly do that? Well, I think you're right that while right now it seems absurd that Microsoft would be able to do that because what just happened with Halo, but that's almost the exact thing. That's what would have taught them the lesson that getting to that point would be so worth it. If you would have had something else you could have moved up in Halo's place, you would have waited on that game and it would have been a completely different story. So I think you're absolutely right.
So then with that, moving to Nintendo, because I feel like Xbox, we can kind of talk about it and assume we will get Redfall, we will get Starfield. Maybe we'll get one or two of the other games you mentioned in that list, like Perfect Dark.
Right, we got to get Hellblade.
Hellblade seems very likely, yes, yeah.
Which Hellblade, yeah. For like a quick aside, Hellblade 2 is going to be a banger. Like we were talking about Hellblade 1 a little bit earlier on the stream, on the Kind of Funny stream. And like, you know, that's a game that didn't come out under the radar because it was like an indie darling, right? It was a hit, but also it was like an indie game and one that, you know, was the first in its series and one that like a lot of people didn't know about. And so it comes out and it becomes something special for the audience that loved it. Now it is coming out under Xbox, right? First party, more resources. It looks like it's going for it way more. That's a game that I think is going to come out and straight up slap people in the face and like have people go, oh, what the fuck? This is what this is. Like, I think it has potential to be that and put Ninja Theory on the map more than what we've seen from them prior. And so I think that's one to look out for in terms of like the big game conversation of 2023.
Yeah, so I mean, looking at that, like that's PlayStation, that's Xbox. I feel like we talked a little about the third party stuff, but then the last big one's Nintendo. And I think going into 2023, we're in such an interesting place where since the launch of the Switch back in 2017, like you can look at each of the years and each one has like a defined kind of taste to it, where it's like 2017 obviously banger after banger, 2018 kind of kept that going, 2019 was a bit more like let's do the Luigi Mansion 3s and get some Astral Chain, like that type of stuff, and then 2020 was Animal Crossing, that's it, and now 2021 2022 is kind of like I think them finding their footing a bit, but kind of delivering the sequels to like the Xenoblades, and it's things like that, and the Fire Emblem like spin-offy stuff with Warriors and all that, and Pokemon. God, like we're just at a point now that we have now Pokemon core games, Pokemon remakes, and Pokemon Legends, whatever that's gonna be. So they got all that down. Looking at 2023, Breath of the Wild 2, right? Like, do we think that's actually going to hit 2023?
It has to.
But then what's the rest of the year look like for Nintendo? And I think that is the big X factor that I can't even imagine with all the amazing games that we just talked about probably hitting in 2023. Guess what? There's so many questions we don't know about Nintendo for next year. Where it's like,
the Odyssey team, what have they been working on?
What have they been up to? Yeah. What is the Mario
what was up with that? What was up with that third person? Oh man, did I make this up in my head? Because it sounds like something I made up. A third person Donkey Kong game?
No,
that's a rumor.
Yeah, the Odyssey team was working on a 2D Donkey Kong game.
2D, that's what it was.
I mean, we'll see if that's the case. It's always possible that they could be doing something. With like a smaller team or something like that, and then Mario Odyssey 2 is still happening, or maybe they're going a completely different direction and going really doing a Donkey Kong game or something like that. But I think the real question here is when does the Switch follow up come, or Switch Pro, I suppose, could still be there as much of a nightmare as that is to talk about. I think by like March 2024 we're getting probably a new Switch of some sort, probably a Switch 2, and then that means, okay, so what effect does that have on the launch the release list for games in 2023? I would expect that they would be like, okay, we'll go pretty heavy earlier in the year, and then if anything is like going to get close to the Switch 2, we'll hold it back for that, except for in very specific circumstances. So that's probably why 2023 is going to be pretty hard to nail down for Nintendo.
Hey, Zelda fan, are you not a fan of how Breath of the Wild 2 is running? Get this new Switch, man. It's going to look real good.
You know what we're not a fan of, Les? Just one Zelda launching every generation now, because that's what's happening now, and it's driving me insane.
And it's always cross-generation. That's the thing that blows my mind. So, like, that was the thing we talked about, like, I think a month ago at this point, of, like, there was the latest trailer for Breath of the Wild 2 and how, like, people, I think it was Digital Foundry that was like, yo, that trailer looked too good to be running on a base Switch. And that leading into speculation of, like, yeah, Nintendo usually does keep with the tech in terms of the trailers they put out. Are they working on a upgraded version of the Switch? The Switch Pro versus Switch 2 conversation is one that, yeah, it is scary to talk about because people go crazy with it online. But then also, in the conversation about a Switch 2 specifically, it's so hard for me to imagine a Switch 2 anytime soon because the Switch is doing so well, right? Like,
right.
And how Nintendo rolls, they like to kind of ride that wave of success. You know, it's why we don't see a new numbered Mario Kart. It's why we're seeing Mario Kart 8 Deluxe DLC years and years past that game coming out, right? Like, it's why we see them sit with certain things. And Switch seems like one that I could see them doing the same thing in. And, like, not that they can't package a Switch 2 in a way where it feels way more iterative than innovative, where it is keeping with the same console family and backwards compatibility.
I think they're going to do that.
You think that's what they're going to do?
Yeah. I really don't think we're going to get a straight up just Switch 2. Like, I think no matter what it is, whatever they call it, I think it's going to be more in the family of the Switch than we've ever seen in previous years from Nintendo. Like, more so even than, like, the Wii being backwards compatible with, like, GameCube games. Like, I don't think it's going to be backwards compatible. I think it's going to be talked about as if it's a similar family.
Yeah, and they mentioned a little bit of this, like, when they were talking around, like, the console transition coming up. And they got misquoted saying they're concerned about that stuff. What they were really saying is, we're going to do what PlayStation's been doing, which is try to keep everyone connected to their Nintendo account through whatever services we have. And basically, they said we want to have a lot of continuity from one thing to the next. And the way you could build the most continuity is just say this is basically like an iPhone upgrade. That's a little bit dangerous waters because, you know, they were there with the NES to the Super Nintendo and trying to convince parents that you needed to go from the Nintendo to the Super Nintendo. But it's a different world, and people are used to upgrading their phones every couple of years. And so it's going to be, what, by March 2024, it'll be 7 years. At that point, and at any point in the future from that point forward, they could drop a new one and basically just present it however they want. And I think the option to do it like an iPhone or iPad upgrade is definitely the one they might actually go with.
See, like, looking back at Nintendo to try to find any pattern for the future is a fool's errand. Like, I feel like that's been proven time and time again. Yes. But I think that the most similar thing that they've done in the past to what I expect to happen here is the Game Boy Color to the Game Boy, where it is still the same thing. It plays all the old ones, and it actually enhances a lot of the old ones to have the new fancy upgrades. But instead of the jump being, oh, it's the old games, but in kind of color now, it's the difference now of, like, it actually runs how a video game should run in 2023 or 4 or whatever it is. But also it does play all the old things, but there will be games that are exclusively available on this new version. And that's where I think the modern type of iPhone talk that Grubb's talking about comes into play, where at some point there is the line of, like, you don't get everything, but if you get the new one, you get it all.
Yeah, and I'm still curious to see how and if they pull it off, because I think we've seen it happen with them recently with the 3DS, and I always forget the name of this game. I think it was like the new 3DS that only played certain games.
Yes.
It was like, what, three or four games?
Very small list.
It was a very small list in a way that, looking back, I'm like, did you really need to do that? Was that a thing that was necessary?
Minecraft only worked on new 3DS, right?
That's Xenoblade Chronicles.
Because it added the C-stick or whatever, right?
It added like the C-nub.
The analog nub.
The C-nub.
Oh, love a C-nub. Yeah. But I do think that it'll, no matter what that is, right, no matter the case being, I do think that will influence the games that launch alongside it. Because I think whether it's a Switch Pro, Switch 2, Switch, the new Switch, I think they are going to want to launch games with it. And I think it's very fascinating thinking about it in terms of, when does that thing hit? Is it at the end of 2023, or is it sometime into 2024? Because if it's at the end of 2023, does that mean Zelda is then getting pushed towards the end of 2023? Because I think that makes the most sense. Like, if I'm Nintendo and we're going to release it in 2023 anyway, it's like, fuck, hold it until we launch the new hardware.
All right,
unless we got Mario Odyssey 2 or something.
Give me my goddamn Wind Waker and Twilight Princess ports, for the love of Christ.
I think that's Nintendo.
The only thing they haven't ported.
This holiday?
Ported,
I think,
everything from the Wii 100%. U. Except these
those
games.
Are games that did. Those games have been done, I think, for a long time, too.
Yeah.
And I think they've just been holding on to them for a rainy day. And the rainy day came when they delayed. I think so. But I think this is exactly what their whole strategy is. It's like, well, we were going to be marketing a Breath of the Wild 2 here. We're not going to be doing that anymore. So now we can just have that team work on this Zelda thing instead. And I think that's how they view it. And they wanted to have one Zelda game released per year on the Switch. And I'm pretty sure if they don't release something this year, they'll miss that.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. I always heard it was both games for $60, but yeah, we'll see.
Do you think it's the same thing for, you know, we've been hearing about Metroid Prime Trilogy. For 5 years at this point, I've been hearing rumors about this thing. Like,
right. So that was my fault. My bad, everybody. I heard Metroid Prime coming to the Switch, and I just assumed they meant trilogy. What was actually happening there is they have retro remaking/remastering. Who knows where it falls on that spectrum? But they're remaking to the first one, just the first one. That is in the works.
I think
this is me speculating, but this November is the 20th anniversary of that game. I think it comes out this November.
Jesus, 20 years.
I would love that. And I don't know, maybe you think differently about this, but like that's my preferred thing, is focus on the first game and get it as right as possible, because 2 and 3 are fine. They're fine.
I've not played through the all-time banger. And so I just want the reason and the excuse. And so maybe I'll go ahead and go to my local game store, buy it, and then download it on my beautiful big Steam.
Yes. It's so good on there.
I was going to say real quick, do we know like what the Switch hardware sales have been since kind of pandemic-ish era? Because I feel like that definitely jump-started.
I feel like very good, and
I feel like that's a large chunk of their sales, obviously, since the pandemic hit, since Animal Crossing kind of had its time. And I wonder if that's kind of making Nintendo think about what they do with this hardware.
They said this exactly. They said that the way things are going, this is like the middle of the life cycle. This was like not the most recent earnings report, but the one before that. Like, we are in the middle of the Switch's life cycle instead of like being near the end after 5-ish years. And it's because the thing, they expected to sell another 20 million consoles in the next year. And you don't, it's very rare that a console gets its successor introduced when you are still planning to ship 20 million consoles. So, yeah. This is why, you know, a successor at any point, they are definitely working on it. Nvidia's definitely got probably a lot of stuff, and they probably do want to hurry Nintendo along in some ways, but Nintendo's going to go at their own pace. And if they're going to sell another 20 million Switches next year, it does seem very unlikely that we're going to get another one right away. But
wasn't there a report about some sort of fallout between Nintendo and Nvidia, and something about a chipset not, because that's the thing that made me initially worry about the news about the.
Yeah. If they've had any issues, I'm sure that's been like they really do plan to work together for 20 years. It's been 5 years now, but for the next 15 years, they're going to keep working together, making stuff. It's going to be Nvidia and Nintendo that entire time. That's the reality.
If I had to predict, I would predict that the Switch life cycle will be the longest Nintendo hardware life cycle. Like I can tell you on my fingers.
That's Game Boy.
How long was the Game Boy?
89 to, if you're counting GBA or GBC, which you should, 2001.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's a good call. But I do think, you know, if we're counting that out, and maybe counting it in, I don't know, like the Switch life cycle is going to be long, right? Like, yes. And whether it is a Switch 2 or Switch Pro, yeah, I think it's going to be iterative in a way where they're going to count that alongside what we have currently. Because, like, the question is why, right? Like, why do you need to make another hardware, a piece of hardware as Nintendo? Because, like, people are buying the Switch to play Nintendo games. People aren't, like, you know, in terms of like power and fidelity and keeping up with all that stuff, like they've not been keeping up anyway. And why would they start now? Right. Like, I can't think of one reason why they would make a Switch 2 or make a big next step.
I could see it maybe internally with like, you know, when it comes to the dev side of things, of like what they want to be able to pull off, and them realistically having a conversation with their hardware, like a team and the people who make those decisions of like, hey, like we can't. You can't keep developing.
Yeah,
can't keep doing this, and you know, even in the Nintendo side of things, push the way that we push of like how we make games and stuff.
Stop holding me back.
But
you know,
yeah, no, hey, I'm right there with you. And being a Nintendo fan for as long as I have been, I have had to learn that they have to innovate in their game design as opposed to their tech
hardware
side. Yeah,
and we've had clear examples of that too. Yeah, like as the words were coming out of my mouth, I immediately thought back to like Majora's Mask, where they wanted to, you know, quickly come out with a sequel to Ocarina of Time, and with their, even with their limitations, like figure out a way to make a game, ship it quickly, and all that.
Reggie Fils-Aimé said as much in terms of like, with big Nintendo franchises, like the idea is like, cool, we need a Zelda, we need a Mario, we need a Splatoon, we need, like, they think in terms of thinking about the sequelizing of their franchises, right? Like, they kind of think about it in terms of like one for console, and we're gonna get to the point where it's like, cool, everything has come out for the Switch, and they could start making sequels, but who knows how much that influences console.
That's kind of where I'm at with this, is this, the Switch life cycle lasting as long as it has, like we have hit something that we haven't had on the GameCube or the Wii or the Wii U, which is, and we've been talking about this forever now, but it's like the Switch is the first time Nintendo didn't have to make games for a portable system and for a console. It's all just been one pipeline, but we're now hitting a point that we're already getting some sequels and stuff in the same generation, but we're now having this opening where there's a lot of question marks of what are these different teams working on? The team that made Odyssey, what are they working on? The team that made Mario Kart, what are they working on? Sure, they're doing the DLC stuff. That we've seen the amount of effort and work being put into that. It is not a full video game. What is the team that made Smash Brothers working on? now that Ultimate's done, now that there's no DLC for these characters. And it's like, we're going to start getting the answers to these questions. What about the team that did Link's Awakening? Deluxe,
yeah,
right?
Grezzo. Like, Grezzo, whatever it is.
Like, we're there. These are the questions that have to be answered at some point. And I think that we are going to get the answers in 2023, and I think, or 2022, but I think that we'll see the releases in 2023. And that starts to add up really quickly to a ridiculous year for Nintendo, for core Nintendo fans.
Then what do you think happens with Mario? Because Mario, we've seen have a game like yearly for the most part, right? At least yearly, if not more, if we're bringing in like side games, right? Like, I'm talking about Mario Maker, I'm talking about Mario Strikers coming this year, right? I'm talking about Super Mario Party coming out last year and all these things. We're gonna get Mario games next year. What Mario games are we gonna get?
I think that's the most interesting question of them all, because not only have we not had a new 3D Mario game since Odyssey, we also haven't had a full 3D world style game since the last one that did have Bowser's Fury, right? But what's that team been working on? But then there's the other X factor that I'm just going to keep talking about until it actually exists. We haven't had a new 2D Mario in, at this point, must be a record amount of time since the last one. Mario Maker doesn't count. It's not the same thing. That's kind of like a subgenre even within that genre. But like, we're going to get another 2D Mario game. Those games sell way, way too well for them to not do it again.
And Mario team is EPD8, and they only make Super Mario, Captain Toad, and the NES remix games. So it's like, what have they done since Odyssey? And you know, they obviously did Bowser's Fury. They obviously like worked on that prototype and turned it into something. But it's like, there's still a big question about what do they have next, and they probably should have a big real game coming up, because they would have known what Bowser's Fury was going to be pretty quickly. So yeah, I would expect them to have something next year. I guess the reality is that if Zelda comes out early next year, it's actually not going to be a cross-gen game, because there seems like a very small chance that we're going to get that new next-gen Switch early next year. So then maybe that does open the opportunity for Mario to be that cross-gen game, or maybe just the Switch 2 launch game. I still think it's unlikely that you work on a Mario game for years and years and you don't sell it to 120, 130 million people that own a Switch. I think it's probably going to happen, but you know, that's at a certain point, that's like, okay, yeah, cross-gen or not cross-gen, whatever. But like, when does it come out? So that could be 2024 before we actually see that.
If we get to an E3, let's say E3 2023, Summer Games Fest or whatever it is, and it is Nintendo and they show off Switch 2, and then the first trailer they show is Super Mario 128. Like, we have a new Mario launch game for the first time in forever, and it's like,
bro, Metroid Dread happened. So who knows, man? What about Metroid Prime 4?
It's not real. Yeah, it's not real. I don't think about Metroid Prime 4.
Yeah, I mean, Retro is working on that Metroid Prime 1 remaster, so it's like, they're also doing Metroid Prime 4 at the same time, and I'm sure it's like there's a lot of overlap where there's plenty of time for people to work on one and not the other. But I mean, that game still does not feel like it's likely for even 2023. So maybe that's like a first year of the next thing at that, like 2024 at the earliest. God, even 2025 sounds more realistic for that game, though.
Andy, was that like a no in agreement, or was that a no in terms of like, oh God, no.
Disbelief. Like, no. 2023 is like not, no. Like I just based on what I've heard and friends of friends that are getting hired and applying for stuff, like 2023 is like not realistic whatsoever. We may get a new logo. Who knows? We may get a new shot of cool logo.
A new JPEG. Yeah.
Man. So having said all that, do we think that 2023 could be the best year in video game history?
Honestly, yeah. Like, I think you convinced me. I don't know if I was in agreement at first, but like, now that we've gone through all the Doctor Strange possibilities of shit that can come out, I'm like, yeah, next year is gonna be jam-packed in games if shit actually hits and doesn't get moved to 2024, which at this point would be crazy if a lot of these games that we've been seeing for years and years and years end up getting moved to 2024. But yeah, like, I think it's gonna be a banger.
I think the fact I think just putting the sequel to one of my favorite games of all time, like God of War 2 being there, along with Breath of the Wild 2, another sequel to one of the best games of all time, I think those two alone can do it. I think everything else can be sort of those ancillary kind of, yeah, those strengthen that year as well, but those are like the two main things that I look at. Oh, Starfield, I'd say also, like, throw Starfield in there. as something that could be a larger than life kind of release that people point to as like a place in time and like, where were you when Skyrim released? Where were you when Starfield released?
Sort of thing.
Dude, jumping off that real quick. I know we're going a little long on this, but like, I want to say this. Has there ever been a year in recent console wars that Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft all had their fucking bangers come out? Because we got close in 2017, right? No. With God of War, or sorry, 2018. But wait, no, even then,
yeah, it's no, like, if you would have combined Nintendo's 2017 to 2018, was, yeah.
Like 2017 was the closest between Breath of the Wild and Horizon.
Yeah.
So that this would be insane. If Starfield, God of War, and Breath of the Wild 2 are all in the same year, it's like same that already quarter. Is unprecedented to go back to like the PS2, GameCube, Xbox days.
Yeah.
Like,
that's wild. That's exciting.
And then it's, those ancillary really titles are the ones that like fill out the year though, right? They're the ones that make it feel like the big game of the year stuff came out, but then I'm going to number 10, number 15 on my game of the year list. And these games are games that I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. Like, and I think this 2023 actually looks like it might be that kind of year because of stuff like Dead Space remake. And if we get like Redfall, if that pans out, and like Spider-Man 2, where like you're mentioning like games that might be like big bangers, and Spider-Man 2 comes up like fifth or sixth, like that's a big, big, big year.
Yeah. Any final thoughts?
There are a lot of games that we didn't even talk about that are like could have been fucking bangers, like Callisto Protocol, like Tales from the Borderlands 2. I assume is probably gonna get delayed till next year. I forget if that's slated for this year or not, but like that Wolf Among Us, right? Like
Alan Wake 2.
God damn, yeah. Oh my like, God. There's that oh my game from God. Game Awards that like looked really cool called Ark Raiders that I think is slated for this year, but that'll probably get delayed. Like there's a lot
Gunbrella,
of
bro.
Gunbrella, baby. Oh my God.
Put it on the books. I mean, you know, the craziest thing, last thing I'll say, we're closing out the show here, but like, where are all the FromSoft games? There has to be something, right? There has to be something.
Can you imagine 2023? If we get fucking, what's the big mech game?
No. There's no shot.
Armored Core.
Armored Core. You want Armored Souls?
That would change the world.
Well, let us know in the comments below what you think about 2023's gaming potential. We're about to do the amazing post show exclusively for patreon.com/kindoffunnygame supporters. But until next time, Jeff Grubb, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on the internet. I tweet too much on at Jeff Grubb. That seems to be where most people find me. But if you want to like have a little bit more of like a closer relationship, just join the Discord. It's gamemess.net. That'll get you right into the Discord.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
Fantastic person to talk to. You're the coolest dude in the entire world. Love it. Round of applause for Jeff Grubb, everybody.
Woo! Yeah.
Till next time. Love you all. Bye.
Thanks, guys.